Hello, my name is Reza Nikumanish. I'm 43 years old. Today's date is Monday, March 2nd, 2020. I'm here in Fresno, California, and I'm with my friend, my comrade, my colleague, Rabbi Rick Weiner.
I'm Rabbi Rick Weiner. I'm 54 years old. Here on Monday, March 2nd, 2020, here in Fresno, California, with my friend, colleague, partner in all sorts of wonderful endeavors, Reza Nikumanish.
Awesome. So, you know, Rick, I was thinking that it'd be awesome to have a conversation just about, I don't think people realize that when it comes to really doing interfaith work, that there are great partnerships that are happening, and I'm sure they happen in many cities and at a national level, but I don't think that they get to see what happens or hear what happens when we're not in front of a camera or in front of a dais or wherever it is that we are, but that we actually work and appreciate each other as human beings and not just in our roles. And I was wondering, like, what made you get involved? Why do you care so much about being involved in interfaith work?
You know, from the time that I was young and listened to my rabbi talk, he talked about the relationships with especially a Protestant pastor nearby that he was close friends with. And then the image that always comes back to me in my decision to pursue professional religious life is always the image of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. You know, I was going to go
there. I knew that's where you were going to go, man.
Well, and it's so timely.
That's right. Absolutely.
Marching alongside of Martin Luther King in Selma, and, you know, having they just were at the Edmund Pettus Bridge again with John Lewis in the midst of battling pancreatic cancer, was out there again.
And what's the quote? When I was marching, my feet were praying.
Right. So, you know, Rabbi Heschel was chided for coming down from his ivory tower of he was a thinker and professor and theologian, and they said, why do you come down from your ivory tower to march with Dr. King? And he said, when I'm marching with Dr. King, my feet are praying. And I, you know, there were years and years where I thought, yeah, that's inspiring, but that's that day is gone. And then that moment, really, when you and I and our buddy, Pastor D.J. Kreiner from the St. Rest Missionary Baptist Church, when the three of us arm in arm were marching through the Capitol Rotunda in Sacramento, I'm sad that these extreme needs for civil rights are necessary, but I'm gratified that we have these partnerships, which, as you've noted, it's deep care, friendship, enjoyment, love of our partners.
People see when we have events or when we march, but they don't see when you and your wife and your friends Irfan and Nagin are frolicking through the Blossom Trail yesterday, you know?
Somebody's been watching my Facebook feed.
Somebody watched your Facebook feed. No, but it was beautiful because I was like, you know, these are people that are working together to bring about understanding, awareness, love, acceptance, power to communities, and they're like literally skipping through a Blossom Trail, you know?
Okay, there was no skipping going on.
Sure,
I just want to say.
Sure there was. I'm just kidding.
It's been decades since I've skipped. Probably the elementary school PE when they
made
us do it.
Either way, they were great, happy, beautiful photos. And most people will probably look at that picture and say, oh, there's some four friends getting together. But I know that those four friendships, while they are friendships now, they started because you guys started doing work together to bring about change for all of our communities.
And you and I. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And our wives, Laura and Sukena, we have that same love and friendship. It was Nagin, our friend and colleague Nagin, who teaches peace and conflict studies at Fresno State. I don't remember who all was on the panel. Were you on the panel? There was the time where she had her students were expecting to meet with this multi-faith religious panel, and because it was peace and conflict studies, they thought they were going to have to mediate between
debaters,
religious groups that were not going to get along. And then they walk into the hall where we all were and see us hugging each other as we're greeting each other, because we hadn't seen each other in whether it was days or months, and they were shocked that, wait, what's going on here? No, we actually really like each other. And so it completely blew their minds.
It's terrible that we have to keep reminding people that we're actually friends, but it's a good thing to say to allow people in the crowd a glimpse into what actually happens between leaders in different communities, to see that there are people that are building relationships for any whatever purpose. But our relationships, they are built on friendship and values and the fact that we all care about one another. But they are also based in something really deep, that all of us want to bring about a greater justice for everybody around us. And it's amazing to be able to do that with your friends rather than just somebody who shows up at an event, because that goes away. We've talked about it a million times. You know, if it's not built out of friendships, out of deep relations, out of care and love, then you're still going to show up and march, but then you're going to go home and that's it. But we don't just go home and that's it. We care. Like, I care what happens to Rabbis Rick and Laura, you know? Like, I care. So it makes a huge difference. So now when something happens to the Jewish community, a terrible thing happens, for me, like, I'm immediately thinking, what's up with my brothers, my sisters, my comrade? What's up with them? Like, what do they need? Rather than just, oh, that really sucks. Somebody should go march.
Reza, can I ask you a question?
You sure can.
Can you kind of, like, speak to where that came from? Like, when did you start prioritizing interfaith relationships? And, like,
sure.
Or have you always?
No. Do you want to, well, us both, because his story is really awesome, too, because when your son asks you, this is all going to get cut out, I imagine, right? So we're
no,
just back and forth.
If
okay.
You don't want to answer,
no, I would
fine,
love to answer
you
it.
Share with each other, I would love to.
Yeah, so so for me, I've always cared about doing social justice work. I've always cared about bringing about awareness. But like many other people that are boxed into a religious tradition, for me, I only did social justice work in the guise of what's the best for the Muslim community. That's where I was a long time ago. I thought, you know, I want to fight for Muslims. I want to stand up for Muslims. The Muslim community is under attack. And then it was, I don't remember when my shift began, or when, I can't look at the point and say this is where I changed, but all of it changed through relationships. All of it changed through relationships. So while I didn't hate Jewish people, I didn't start really caring about Jewish people until I had Jewish friends. And while I didn't hate any particular group, I just wasn't around any particular faith, whether they be strong Christians, because, you know, in college, being around Christian activists, I didn't have a space. I was pushed out. So I never really cared. I was like, yeah, I want social justice for everybody, but yeah, you go do your thing. At some point, when I started building relationships with people, is when everything changed for me. And I will say that while I don't know when that happened, I do know that in the past 6 or 7 years is when it really heightened in me. That's because of the clergy caucus that we're a part of. That's because of Faith in the Valley. That's because of the Interfaith Alliance. That's because of the Interfaith Scholar. It's about all the different times that I sat with people and did good work or revolutionary work or love work. And we were different faiths coming together. So I don't know where it shifted. I don't know where it began. I just know that I had to pull myself out of the box of I'm fighting for my people, to the fact that I'm fighting for my people, but my people is bigger than the Muslim community.
And I came from a really progressive background where interfaith work was something that I hoped for and expected. And my first year in town, my success in interfaith was meeting a subgroup of pastors from the northwest side of town who were not really nearly as I say colorful, but I don't mean that in skin color, although that is the case, but colorful in just overflowing personality. And we go back to our, at that time, it was Faith and Community, the community organizing group. And I sat in a meeting at Westside Church of God, one of the African-American churches, and listened to the normal pitch of the organizers who like to encourage you to get involved in grassroots things that sound like they're probably coming from somewhere else. And the pastors around the table said, No, I want to, what we need is this. And the organizers said, okay, then that's what we're going to do, which is perfect. And I met some of those pastors. I met you, Reza, and it didn't take long for us to go to lunch after meeting and go to this and go to that. My wife and I love going to the Islamic Cultural Center for the events there. I have no doubt that we show up at the Islamic Cultural Center more than some of the members.
That's right.
And some of my interfaith friends certainly show up at the temple, the synagogue, more than some of my members. And we love each other. You had mentioned my son, sometime after coming to Fresno, he said, "Dad, you've changed." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "You're always like marching and going to these rallies and things like that and yelling at politicians." I said, "I haven't changed. I'm finally getting the opportunity to do what I went into this for." And I think I keep coming back to, in the work that we share, in this pursuit of justice, we find that we're not absolutely 100% aligned on every issue, but it's so close. But the work is exhausting. It is so exhausting. But when you do it with friends, the hug that comes with the march, and the dinner with your colleagues and lunch and all of that, it gives you the not only bodily nourishment, because, oh my God, the Muslim community feeds you really well, as good as a Jewish mother, but it also gives you the spiritual energy to keep marching on.
Big time. I think that there are times where I don't even know if I want to be in a space, or I'm tired of being in so many spaces. I'm tired of standing on the same damn corner all the time fighting for the same things. I've been standing on Shaw and Blackstone or Blackstone and Nice for, 20-something years. And sometimes I'm like, why the heck am I here anymore? I don't feel like I'm making an impact. I don't know if anybody's listening. And then it's those reassuring moments where you're like, well, I'm here with my brothers and my sisters. And we're all fighting for the same thing. And even if I don't get to make the change that I want to make right now, yeah, I know that, yeah, I'm building something better in the future. And it's only because of the relationships that we have and that we're able to say, okay. And like you said, we don't agree on everything. We agree on most things. The things that we don't agree with, that's left for another day. When you and I can't work on the same issue, or if I want to be at a program that you might not like, or you want to be at a program that I might not like, or you might want to push a policy, or I might want to push a policy, or a politician, or whatever it is, we can do that. Like, neither of us are going to cut the other one off, because we have a deep enough relationship over everything else. First of all, as I said, over our friendship, but over the work that we do, that when we disagree, we are also compassionate in a way that it's like, all right, well, that's where they're at that time. And we're not going to like start hating on each other over this or that issue.
It's also really rare.
Yeah.
The disagreements are really rare. I look around, and I'm sure you have this at the Islamic Center. We are far more aligned on a whole lot of issues, political issues and such, between each other, between you and my other friends at the Islamic Center, than I am with some of the members of the synagogue.
Sure.
We have a wide range of what's there. And, sure. and I try to keep politics out of the synagogue because that's necessary there. I think we share that to some extent.
Yeah. I like to bring up an example, like, because one of the things that we have, we're not so diametrically different in the position, but when we talk about, for example, Israel and Palestine, we have some differences of opinions, but they're not something that would force us to, like, disrespect or hate each other. And those are the conversations we have in private. So when we do have something like that that we may disagree with, we still talk about it. We
yeah,
still make
actually,
jokes, but just not. That's not the thing that I'm going to go out to the public and argue or debate over an issue with you, because that's small.
Right.
But I'm going to have. But we've had those conversations. We've had hard conversations. We've had conversation. We make jokes back and forth. You know,
we have
but,
to be careful because not everyone knows when we're joking.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that like there is when you care about somebody and when you believe that you have a. You want to make a big change, that when you're out there fighting, whatever you're fighting.
Absolutely.
And when you have disagreements, you come and you talk.
And I would say even on the Israel-Palestine issue, we're far more aligned than most people are.
Absolutely. I don't think people could realize that.
It not only do they not realize it, but people don't believe it when
sure.
we say it over and over. We say the same things. I'll never forget when we had a speaker in town who was kind of pushing some of us on this, and you had to leave early. And then I remember you texted me, you want me to come back. I don't want you to leave you alone
That's
for
right.
this. I had walked out by that point anyway, but it's like, enough already, let's go get dinner.
Yeah. No, that's right. People never get to see those things.
Right.
So, and I don't need them to see it. We don't do that to advertise, but the fact is that they don't get to see that a Muslim and a Jew are willing to stand together and fight, even if it's against what looks like our quote unquote own community.
And the reason, yes, I agree that I don't need people to see that. But the reason I like people to see it is because I think we serve as a model that can be inspiring.
Yeah.
Knowing that we're not doing it to be inspiring.
Right.
Our friendship is because it's our friendship.
That's right.
But if there's the added benefit that it can inspire others, we had this leader of interfaith relations come in from D.C., and he was amazed at how broad.
Are you talking about Jack Maline?
Yeah, Rabbi yeah. Jack Maline from the Interfaith Alliance nationally was really impressed by the breadth of the interfaith engagement. It's not unusual that you might have a Jew, a Muslim, and a Christian get together. But then you add the layers that we have and the amount of people who come together. And we really work hard to try to get even more breadth, and men and women and gay and straight, and our broad alliance standing up for all of them.
That's right. Another great example was when Dr. Robert Sellers had come, like the chair of the Parliament of the World's Religions, and he had come to like three different events. He came and he spoke for the Human Rights Coalition. He came to the Islamic Center when we had lunch. At some point, I don't remember when, and here's this person who chairs the largest interfaith organization in the entire world, and he was quoted in our Fresno Bee, which is, you know, moving and changing so often, but he said that Fresno has one of the most one of the most productive or active interfaith communities he had ever seen in the world. So when he says something like that, you're like, wow, this is amazing, because we have a lot of things to not be happy about in our city, in our community. And this is something, it's one of the only things that gives me life.
And I've been wondering, because I've analyzed a lot, whether the fact of those challenges that you mentioned helps us with that kind of thing. Because where I came from before, the Liberal Bay Area, which I love, I think perhaps we took for granted that, oh, yeah, it's easy for us to talk to people who are not like us, and we didn't do it. here in Fresno, the phrase that I keep thinking about is, where I was before, you could sweep the problems under the rug. Here in Fresno, we don't have a rug big enough. and so there are so many challenges that people have not written them off. Throughout the city, there are so many people who care, and we get the opportunity as religious leaders to represent a lot of those people who are more than happy to have us yelling at politicians instead of them or standing on the street corners instead of them, but we do it.
That's right. Nothing. I think that if I could go back and just reiterate something you said that I've said so many times, is that in the Bay Area, you know, obviously there are problems, but everybody knows there's problems. And you have a huge number of people working to, you know, fight those evils or those problems. In Fresno, our problems are huge and visible. We know who's against us. We know who wants to tear us apart. We know who doesn't want to support our families. We know who wants to make life harder for immigrant communities and for the oppressed or the marginalized communities. So I think it allows us to, like, because it's so easy to see that this is a problem, we can get together so easily to fight it. Whereas if you have, you know, problems that are not as visible or not as prevalent, it's a little bit difficult because you're like, I don't know if I stand with you on that moment. I don't know what I can do. It might be a little bit more difficult. And then finally, it's not just about being able to see the problem and wanting to work with it, but I don't know if people realize that in Fresno, no matter where I want to get in Fresno, it's easy. You know, whereas if you're in LA or the Bay, it's very difficult to be at everything because everything's an hour and a half drive because
5 miles.
5 miles. We're in Fresno. We can go to TBI and go to St. Rest and ICCF all in like an hour. And like we could have a 10-minute conversation at each place. Well, maybe an hour and a half. But the point is this, very easy to get around, and we're able to be there for each other so much.
I see an event coming.
Exactly. All right. That wouldn't be bad,
we'll
would
jump
it?
From each of the one, do something, a progressive, not party, a progressive, I don't know, religious engagement activity.
And then bounce to the next?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a bad idea, by the way.
It also occurs to me, you know, as you're talking, that, you know, okay, so if you're cooking, you want to pick quality ingredients. And I think one of the things that we really benefit from is some of the people who were, I think, even already ahead of us and then encouraged us to engage in the interfaith world are really good people who were open-minded to begin with. And so those of us who also want to participate in open-minded religious dialogue and are interested and willing to listen to others, it encouraged others. So I think that just continues to breed high quality interfaith engagement.
That's right.
Because you and I have both seen it, where interfaith is a Catholic and a Protestant. I remember you telling me about, you know, when you learned that one of the community organizers wasn't Christian. No
yeah,
offense to our Christian friends, it was much more welcoming as a Muslim because, you know, most of our world that you and I deal with is Christian, and it's really nice to have that commonality. I mean, who would know that that for me, a Jew, having a Muslim to, I want to say party with, but that's not the word we're looking for, the in between to engage with, but it's so much more fun than that. Yeah. And for you, I think the same way, you know, there are times where it's you and I against the world for the world.
Yeah, and in so many settings that you're not in, like, it's like one of my bragging points. Like, you know, like one of my very close buddies is the rabbi. And I'm like, huh? Really? How does that happen? And I'm like, well, because we're human beings, and we look at each other as dignified individuals that have the right to live and love and work. And so definitely.
Well, and that, you know, even further leads me beyond the social justice realm that brings us together. Both you and I are involved in religious engagement. And religious engagement in America is a challenge today. And part of the reason it's a challenge is because there's so many barriers.
Yeah.
And that's not the way we function. And both you and I believe, do what we can to engage young people and to push back the traditional hypocrisy of religion. And so when we can dispel the myths, when people walk up and say, wait, that's not really how a Muslim is supposed to act. That's not how a Jew or a rabbi is supposed to act. Yeah, right. Well, I don't know what you were expecting, but this is the way we act. Welcome to
the
religion
world
in Fresno and the world. Yes.
Oh, that's right. What has been one of the most difficult things in your past? Let's just keep it within the last 6 years, because faith and community activism and the caucus, what has been the most difficult thing, whether it's in the Jewish community, in your own family, or if it's, I mean, with our broader group, what's the most difficult part for you, being somebody that's at the forefront of interfaith engagement, activism, work, organizing?
Well, there are still setbacks. I mean, there are still moments where I walk into the room and I get real frustrated when I see people who I think either don't get it or are choosing to look at the negative. I mean, we had a real tough one a few months back when a friend of ours was trying to kind of do penance for his style of Christianity. He felt bad. And I think, you know, for you and I, it was a non-issue. But for some of our other good friends who felt like it was not their realm of Christianity that should be apologizing, they were offended, and it really threatened to tear our group apart. And I know you worked very hard to bring people back to the table, and at the same time, you know, another friend of ours who is a Native American lesbian religious leader feels marginalized in traditionalist Christian circles. And I think most of our friends and colleagues are more welcoming than she realizes, but we don't always have that hard conversation either.
That's right.
So trying to get past those is really challenging. And then there are times where I realize, wow, one of my friends really does believe so differently that I rarely ever have to say we're going to have to agree to disagree. And yet in some of those cases I do, and it's tough because you and I never have a disagreement that feels like it's substantial, or Imam Ghazvini or... that never feels
what
like
about,
it.
What about, I think let's not count, everybody counts and everybody matters, but let's not talk about like the very right wing group of folks in our community. But what about like just the average members at TBI, at Temple Beth Israel? Do they ever think you're a sellout or wonder why you are so willing to put a Muslim or a Christian on the front?
Get me
or
in to trouble help, on record.
No, to help raise the Torah, which was an amazing night for me.
That was interesting.
But did you have anybody say you're a sellout or you're selling us out or you're a punk or any of those things that they like to hurl at us?
Generally not. There are a few things here and there. One of the biggest issues, because what we do gets a lot of publicity. They think I'm spending a lot more time doing it than I actually am. So I've had to like analyze how much time I'm spending with the interfaith world and say, okay, really, this is like less than 10% of my time. And don't forget that when you hired me, you said you wanted us back in the interfaith world. Two quick things. When I chose this year to have our group to have the synagogue march in the Fresno Pride Parade for the first time, and really it's more problematic because it happens on our Shabbat, on our Sabbath. Yeah. I got only one pushback from somebody who is just not LGBT supportive, but our synagogue is very supportive. But you know, you were alluding to the service that we had after the synagogue was attacked in Pittsburgh, which was one of the most powerful moments of my life. The way people came together for that, and I had very last minute, like while it was happening, I was making the decision to. I knew I wanted to read from our Holocaust Torah scroll, and I knew I wanted it held up so everyone could see it. And I decided, knowing that I might take flack, that I would have my brothers, you, and our brother DJ, the Black Baptist preacher, hold up the scroll. Not one negative comment.
Oh, nice.
It was the opposite. I mean, that was when people lost it, when people were crying. Wow. And knew that it was powerful. So where it's most important, the community has been outstanding. And I always feel that when I walk into the Islamic Center, yeah. when I am so warmly welcome there. I know we both get a little bit of pushback. You get some.
My the interesting pushback I get is by very, or they think they're very hardcore Muslims, who come to the interfaith spaces that I invite them into, hoping that I can pull numbers because you and I are always competing over how many Jews or Muslims are in the house. But when I bring them into those spaces and I tell them that it's an interfaith space that everybody has, and then it feels very Christian, you know, in the way that,
right.
In that I get people coming back to me all the time, like, you know, like that I'm a sellout, or why would I invite Muslims into a space just for them to be indoctrinated into Christian thought, or, and so, you know, I know how to respond to those things, but sometimes I feel it too. You know, sometimes when we sit and have our interfaith prayer times or clergy time, you know, and somebody will share a prayer from their own tradition without any consideration to who else is in the room, because I still want people to be whole themselves.
Right.
But I want them to be whole and themselves and sincere while still understanding that we're not all in the same theological space. I have a tough times sometimes.
Yeah, it's been really gratifying though to see some of our hardcore friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shift their language.
Yeah.
And learn to do more inclusive kind of prayer. So and some don't and won't.
But not from your committee. Nobody comes and says you're a sellout.
Well, I would say no one who has any significant power in the community. No, they're mostly grateful.
That's awesome.
And impressed. I just have to assure them that they're still getting their money's worth out of my time.
And I would share that the vast majority are grateful of the interfaith work that we get to do, because we get to do it. It's not like it just falls on us. We get to do this stuff, but there's just a couple people who think, you know, maybe you need to reground yourself in Muslimness or Islam rather than finding ways to appease people who don't believe the same. So there's those people that exist.
You know, on my way over here, I walked by the statue in Courthouse Square that represents the rabbi who was here very early on for 40 years. And this was years ago. He created this radio show, Forum for Better Understanding.
With Jim?
This was before Jim got it as a TV show.
Really?
So it started in the 40s.
Oh,
Rabbi Greenberg, the Episcopal Dean, and the Catholic Monsignor.
Wow.
And so there's this big statue for the three of them for the radio show that became the TV show. And the thing that disappoints me now is that that needs to be broadened.
Yeah.
It needs to include the other religions that we've now brought to the
table.
Well,
maybe we need to advertise that statue exists
right
in the first place, because I'm sitting here with you and I didn't know that.
And it's right there.
That's crazy.
Courthouse Square. And it was early on in American interfaith life. It was a nationally syndicated radio show that eventually became a TV show in the local Catholic TV station, which is nationally syndicated, which our good friend and partner Jim Grant took over, which is how I met him.
That's how I met him as well.
Absolutely. And I continue to be just absolutely inspired by that, but it's too narrow.
Wow. Well, I can just go sit there, like, post up next to the statue.
Well, we got to take pictures with it. I've exactly. taken some pictures with it.
Oh, I mean, I'll just stand there to be part of the statue.
Okay.
So that way there's a Muslim chilling out over there.
Can we paint you to look bronze?
Yeah, let's do it, man. I'll do it like they do in your neck of the woods in the Bay and just be, like, moving once in a while.
Oh, yeah, they have people who do that.
Exactly. I think... I don't know. I am extremely grateful for the work that we get to do, and I think that other people just need to reach out, you know, and they don't have to be part of a church. That's the other thing that's a misconception, is that interfaith also includes folks that might not be of a particular faith.
Right, right.
They could be agnostic or atheist or
absolutely.
Or spiritual but not religious or whatever, wherever they fall. But if they want to work with a group of people who are dignified, who see the dignity in all, however they theologically put that, because we put it differently, but we see the dignity in all, and want to fight together, stand together, move together, march together, pray together or not pray together, whatever it is, all they got to do is reach out. Go to somebody who's already taking part in the work, because as you say, you want the statue to broaden and include more. Our group, you know,
right.
it needs to broaden as well.
And I think around the country where people don't have this, they need to be looking for it, creating it. And I think one of the ways to get it is to do some, in Hebrew there's a term tzimtzum, which means to withdraw, which in today's world means withdrawing your own ego, withdrawing your own issues in order to make room for others. And when we do that, it's just so much more gratifying.
Could we translate that today, just like, say, put out more folding chairs? Huh? Make some space at the table for everybody?
Yeah, or stand arm in arm.
Stand arm in arm. Like you started today. Stand arm in arm and be together, love together, fight together, or march through the Capitol. Whatever it takes, just be an arm in arm and finding power in that. Well, I appreciate that we're able to have this conversation today. I really love my time with you. I know that there's a lot more than we're going to get to accomplish together. But I think it was an amazing experience to be able to sit and just hear, you know, why you do what you do, what you love about it, what you might not love about it. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. I love our time together, and I like it anyway, and again, bonus if it can inspire other people.
That's right.
I have a question before we end.
Yeah.
If that's okay.
Yeah, please.
You can say no to this, but I'm curious, because you both talked a lot about your own faiths, if you would be interested in closing out with a prayer.
Yeah.
And just kind of like bring that into the space.
Yeah. Do it, Rick.
Oh, you're putting me on for that. Let's see.
Oh, what about if we do something totally different? You want to go line for line?
All right, let's give it a shot.
All right, well, I just say whatever comes to your brain.
Well, I'm going with a bit of a formula. May the one who creates peace in the heavens above us bring peace upon the earth for all of us.
Oh, there's nothing I can say after that. Amen. you know what? I just pray that what we've been able to accomplish locally, people can accomplish in every sector of the community. I pray that the creator, that the sustainer, that the Lord of the worlds, however you want to call upon this greater entity that we all believe in, that we are able to understand and see in each other the dignity and worth in creation, and then stand up and fight and uplift and raise and empower anybody who might not be in power, anybody who might be suffering, and do it with your brothers of different faiths.
Inshallah.
Inshallah.
So may it be.